The Five Leadership Questions podcast is brought to you by Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Southeastern desires to equip pastors, missionaries, theologians, scholars, and other believers to obey the commands of Jesus to make disciples anywhere and everywhere God calls them to go. They have a wide range of degrees at many levels. Whether you want to become a pastor, missionary, or seminary professor, Southeastern can provide you with the high-quality education and training that you need. Southeastern even provides a number of distance education options for those who are interested but cannot relocate. To learn more, visit sebts.edu/5LQ. That's sebts.edu/5LQ. Now, enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I am your host, Barnabas Piper, here with Todd Adkins.
What?
And Kevin Spratt.
Word.
Before we started recording, Todd called Kevin Yogi Berra for his quotable non sequiturs. So, listeners, I'm just preparing you. Listen for those. They're a national treasure. They're sort of more of a hidden treasure than anything.
They are.
They should be a national treasure. That doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about today. It just amused me, so I thought I would throw it out there. We are talking about partnership versus competition today. So when I took the StrengthsFinder test right out of college, so when would that have been, 11, 12 years ago now?
You're old.
Yes, I'm getting up there. You're like 2 months older than I am, Yogi. Competition was in my top three at that point. It's not in my top five anymore because I'm maturing and chilling way out.
That is not true.
Well, it's true. It just makes you wonder what I was like at 23.
Comparatively speaking.
That's right. No, perhaps. This is a sliding scale. So competition was something that I was near and dear to me, and also the way that I sort of viewed how to go about handling anything in life. Every conversation was competition. Every sales pitch was competition. Every meeting was competition. I probably wasn't terribly pleasant to be around. But that also means that partnership in an organizational context was something I had to learn. So competition is also a very important part of business because – you know, you have to gauge yourself against something. You have to compete against standards or possibly other organizations. There's a lot of different directions this could go. But in the ministry world, we also understand that partnership, working together to multiply effectiveness, is very important. So we're kind of going to try to talk through and sort through some of those things. I'm just going to put our first question out there, and it's a very, like we often do, a very general, open-ended question to kick the conversation off. And the question is, why is partnership between organizations or between teams within an organization healthier than competition between them? So why is it healthier to partner than to compete with other organizations or with other teams in your own organization?
I think it's
Or is it? I guess that's the addendum.
Yeah, when I read the question, I was just focusing on outside organizations, but I realized the internal kind of flips that a bit. I think regardless of whether it's internal or external, it's really about a wealth of ideas, an idea sharing across teams. So regardless of that team's internal, external. You know, I think even on our team, we have a tendency to really think alike, and then there becomes this groupthink mentality. And so when you get with another group that kind of throws you off that cadence and that normal rhythm, mm-hmm. it spars and sparks other things. And I think the thing that I don't like about this question is that I think that I think there can be healthy competition. I think competition can be good because I think that it can push you to strive to be – it always pushes you and to be better than what you are currently. Somebody said recently there's about a consulting deal, and somebody was basically making the point that you know, you can be the trailblazer in a certain topic, whether that's like if you think about Apple and the iPod. I mean, what really probably pushed the iPod more than anything else is all the other devices that came along after it, right? Is just the development of the other tools that have come along. Even the iPad now, right? You got Microsoft and what they've coming out with their tablet version. It's pushing the envelope on everything.
What's funny about you bringing that up is that as you were talking, I was thinking about the conversation we had with Simon Sinek a year ago.
Yep.
Where he talked about infinite games versus finite games.
Right. Yep.
So the idea that in a finite game you play to win, there is a single winner, and there's
your competitors are. It's clear differentiation yeah, between partner and competitor.
Your goal is to defeat the competitor.
Yeah.
And an infinite game, there's not a clear endpoint. The goal is to continually get better. So your competition is really wherever you were yesterday.
There's more frenemies
in
that.
And the example that he gave was Apple as an infinite game and Microsoft as the finite gamer who so constantly seeking to be better than their competition, whereas Apple paid little attention to their competition from a from a market research standpoint they didn't whatever, but just from a product development and how to continue to be better, they were looking at bettering themselves. And so it's that right there is an interesting I don't know, just sort of ingredient in this conversation, the idea of
competition can be really counterproductive. And one of the ways, one of the ways it does that is by making you lose focus on your customer and focus on your competitor. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you lose.
Yeah, and I think competition, I think competition is effective and healthy in a small scale setting. So, like in an organization, if two teams have a friendly competition about who can accomplish which by what something by what date, so two publishing teams are both trying to push out a book or a Bible study or something, they're trying to do so the best product by a certain date, and it's sort of a everybody wins if one of them wins. So right. it's not a zero sum game. It's a for the good of the organization, or a fundraising competition, which team can raise the most money or donate the most toys or whatever. Those kinds of things. A competition is healthy in that way because it's raising the bar for everybody. But really what you're doing in those contexts is all working towards a common goal, not trying to defeat the enemy.
That's the piece, is the common goal piece. Because you look at I'm trying to think of the title of the book. But it was it Team of Rivals? It was about Lincoln's cabinet.
Yes.
Okay. Team of Rivals. I
just finished that not too long ago. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's like 4 billion pages long.
Well, it's been a while since I've read it. But what I remember about it was that it was the common goal piece that really brought them. That brought them all together. And, otherwise, these guys hated each other.
And the one guy in the cabinet who was the squeaky wheel was constantly pushing for a different goal. He was the one who constantly saw himself as inferior, and competition became an obstacle to him being able to partner with the others. I think the other thing, Kevin mentioned this at the beginning, partnership adds to our strengths. So competition, we take our strengths and try to be better than somebody else. And partnership is to say, I'm good at this and you're good at this other thing. Combined, we're better.
The Wonder Twins.
Yeah. me.
By
your powers combined.
And ice cream.
I am Captain Planet.
That's right. That's exactly what I was thinking. So, it's not always just addition. It can also be, Todd loves the phrase force multiplier, which also sounds straight out of, I don't know, Captain America, but it's
maybe
the idea that the force
will be with you.
The idea that partnership improves everybody involved. And that's why it is significant, and why churches often they need to focus on this more, because different ministry areas, they may not be in competition, but they're definitely not partnering. They each just sort of do their own thing and they run on parallel tracks. But partnership between them would improve both the kids' ministry and the student ministry. It's a lot of work to partner well, though. Like, it's not an easy thing.
It is.
It's a ton of work, and you know, there's a miss, especially when you have 5,000 people on your campus, for instance, for a trunk or treat, which I think I'll kind of tout my church for this because I think they did it well. They did it well in that
trunk or treat. Hey, kids, want some candy?
That's my drug. Really creepy. Thanks, Barnabas, for that.
Nothing like giving candy out of a stranger's car.
Right.
Carry on.
So we had 5,000 people come to our campus for trunk or treat, and it was something that was promoted by kids ministry, but you had a ton of the student ministry who were involved in, you know, kind of board games and kind of carnival games, and kind of all around. So it was a bigger effort.
Stop. Want to play Monopoly?
Golly,
the House of Horrors.
But it was a bigger deal, and everybody worked together on that project, right? And so you had multiple levels where everybody wasn't just working in solid. It wasn't just a kids ministry thing. It became a church-wide thing at that point because there were multiple people involved in it.
Well, I want to move on before we start talking. Somebody starts talking about like geese flying in formation.
Gosh, the V. Or Mighty Ducks. What? What mindset do leaders need to have to keep partnership at the forefront of their
you
efforts?
You didn't let me tell my Mighty Ducks story.
No, trying to move this along.
All right. We'll go with that question.
What mindset do leaders need to have to keep partnership at the forefront of their efforts?
So making partnership a priority.
Why didn't you just say that?
I don't know, because I wrote these questions up. I don't know.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
We recorded a podcast.
You need to read Four Disciplines of Execution. That's what you need to do. This is like the antithesis of a recording with Eric.
Yes. So, Four Disciplines of Execution. Are you talking about the way I write questions or making partnership a priority?
Maybe both. One of the ways you make partnership a priority is when, okay, so Four Disciplines of Execution, great business book that's been mentioned on this podcast, I don't know, 14 times by now. But really, it's, okay, rather than having our organization having 16, you know, goals, we're going to have two. Or we're going to have three at any given time, and that's it. That are wildly important goals for the whole organization, for everybody. So in a church setting, trunk or treat and two other things are the tent pole events that we're all going to pitch in on. Otherwise, yes, my individual area has its goals that we want to accomplish. But what are the wildly important goals for your organization? And then establishing what the scorecard is, making sure that you have lead measures in place. So we know if we hit these things, it will lead to that thing. So right now I'm eating no carbs and I am not exercising, but if I did, that would help me get to the lag measure of, hey, I got to drop like 15 pounds. So in order to do that, I know if I only eat 1,500 calories a day and I get to my 10,000 steps in, I'm going to hit that goal
and be
for
hungry.
Sure. And be hungry, yes. And maybe hangry.
Hangry.
Mm, plays well on a podcast.
Okay, and the last thing is cadence of accountability. So having a wildly important goal, clear scorecard, everybody knows what the lead measures are, and finally, a cadence of accountability. Are we going to talk about this weekly? Are we going to talk about this monthly? Or are we going to talk about this? What is the cadence that's going to get us there to make sure that we're all clearly communicating with each other and that we're all pushing in that one direction so that we can, you know, keep it at the forefront of your efforts? The only way you're going to do that is have a regular cadence of accountability, because if you chop up the work and, you know, send it out to various parts of the organization and don't have a regular cadence of checking in, somebody's going to drop the ball. We all know that.
So that's really keeping partnership within an organization.
Within an organization, yeah.
But partnership on the broader scale. So, I mean, that's sort of one half of the conversation. So we've talked about partnership within an organization or a ministry, and now we've got partnership with other ministries or organizations. And I think it seems to me that what the leader needs to have in mind there is – it's a very similar thing, but it's an end goal. What are we trying to accomplish? Because then you look around at other ministries or organizations who are trying to accomplish similar things, and you say, they're better at this, you know, they're better at this piece of the goal than we are. Yeah. If we can partner with them, we are then closer to achieving this end goal. This is where churches, I think, often go very, very wrong or are very, very weak, because everything is insular. They don't look at other churches and say, that church does better at. Mm. So churches start their own ministries. You know, we're going to start our own outreach to the homeless ministry. There's a church four blocks away who has a thriving ministry in that area. Why don't you partner with those people?
And another ministry in that city that you could support dedicate those resources to. Yeah, I think that's a biggest piece when you look at externally. And I think a lot of that has to start with senior leadership. I think whether you're, if you're, especially if you're a kids minister or student minister or collegiate minister, your tendency is to be way more internal, just because, hey, my sphere of influence really is here, and this is where I have the most influence. But I do think that, you know, that's got to be modeled at the senior leader level, to say, where are we going as a church? What's our vision as a church? Where's the next obstacle that, or the next hurdle that we need to reach, and get after, and really think through how do we make that opportunity real? I mean, you think back to, you know, if you're in Southern Baptist life, I mean, the two bigger missions goals that are really more external to the church that I can think of even growing up are, you know, Lottie Moon at Christmas and then the Annie Armstrong offering. Those are two huge goals that Southern Baptist has in general come together on. And it's really, you know, if you think about it, that's really what unites us other than the Baptist faith message. Sorry, this is a very Baptist response, but
yeah, that's okay. Baptist yogi.
Right. But yeah. But in that though, that's a great example of, you know, 150 plus year history of the Southern Baptist Convention, because they've had an outward facing goal, to reach both the United States and North America, as well as internationally. And so, you know, as a leader and as an organization, looking at what are your external goals that do impact on a broader basis that you can partner with people on the outside with.
Let's hit our next question, which is this one I think is simple enough to be clearly understood by all parties involved. What are the most common obstacles to partnership?
Egos. I'm done.
Egos, and I mean, which leads to that competitive nature of our product's better than yours, or our services are better than yours, or our church and how we do stuff is better than yours. I mean, that's
and ego goes hand in hand with insecurity. You know, if
totally
partnership requires opening up to the way other people's values, other people's methodology, other people's weaknesses, you know, you run the risk of being dragged down by a partner to, you know, not to failure, but like, to a different standard. You know, you may have a standard of excellence that they don't hold, and so there's going to be challenges there. I think compromise is a real challenge for some people, because you want to do things your way, and compromising to do things, finding a middle ground on things is a very difficult thing to do, I think, for churches especially, because churches thrive on values, and compromise is anathema when you thrive on values. Because you feel like you're giving up, you're not just giving up a way of doing things, you're giving up a thing that you attach moral or godly value to sometimes. And that's, you know, sometimes we've attached that to the wrong things. And sometimes it does require going, but the bigger picture here, reaching the poor, sending more missionaries, whatever it is, that's a value. The thing that we've attached value to is not really a value, a moral value.
Yeah, and I think trust and just awareness of others and other people in the world. I mean, I'd never forget, we were with another parachurch organization talking about different pastors' conferences and gatherings of people, and they said, "We've never heard of Catalyst. What's Catalyst?" And I went, "Really? Like, your emphasis is two pastors. You only, I mean, they had a significant run. I think they probably reached a couple thousand pastors every year, and they did a number of weekend retreats and that kind of thing." And I kind of sat back and went, "Really?
Yeah.
You don't know about Catalyst?"
It sort of had that city on a hill mentality, where like, we do it our way and people come to us, as opposed to who's doing what well.
Right. And and so just having an outward understanding and focus. And that's, we've said this 100 times here, is that leaders are readers, leaders are learners, you know, even if it's outside of your camp. I mean, that's kind of the trust issue of, well, they think a little bit differently on these topics, right? But, you know, because we think this way, everything else they have to say might be wrong or suspect. Well, no, that's not completely true. You partner with things that make sense and where you can, you know, theologically agree on, you know, Lutherans and Baptists and everybody else are going to get together when,
heretic.
I know, when there's a major disaster, a flood or a tornado or a wildfire or you know, a hurricane, something, everybody's going to get together and jump in and help out.
I think one other significant obstacle to partnership is that they are a lot of work. Yep. It is easier to
do it yourself.
It is easier to do it yourself than to work with somebody else, period. It's your ceiling is probably a lot lower most of the time. Your reach is your own reach. There is no multiplied reach there. But I mean, we struggle with this as a team often because we have found some effective ways to do things ourselves, kind of outside of, especially working with other teams at Lifeway. But the net result when we have, you know, essentially disciplined ourselves to do the work of partnership, the net result has been better than when we just try to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
So we could do it cleaner, we could do it faster, we could do it easier if we just do it ourselves. But the big result when we work with others is a dramatic improvement in reach and effectiveness and in goodwill. You know, we have built up sort of a cachet of goodwill with others in the organization. So I think just the difficulty of it is a challenge. All right, next question. Here's another one. Kevin's going to make fun of me for being wordy. So I'll say it and then I'll rephrase it for the audience. If interactions between teams or organizations have been competitive in the past, what steps can be taken to move toward cooperation?
So play nice.
Translation.
Play nice.
How do you move from competition to partnership?
All right. I think one of the first things that you do is you have one of those big goals that you can only accomplish with, you know, multiple areas of your church or your business, where you're asking people to partner together to accomplish something great. Mm-hmm. So casting that vision, putting that out there so that they almost have to work together on this. And when you're debriefing how well it went, that's when you start to point out places that those two parts of your organization have siloed off from each other.
I think somebody just has to go for it. Like if a team in an organization realizes that their own limitations and they go, but that team's really good at this thing. You know, they're better at event planning than we are. They're effective marketers. They reach an audience we don't reach.
Yeah.
You just go for it. Yeah. And most of the time, if somebody takes the initiative to try it, unless the other team is very arrogant or very scared, you're going to make some headway. So somebody just has to take the initiative and sit down and cast the vision for, hey, if we work together on this thing, we can reach this goal. And unless the other team just says, I don't care about that goal, or I don't want to work with you, you're going to make headway. So just taking the step to do it.
Sometimes it's putting your ego aside and asking them to teach you something.
That's what I was going to say. Yep. Everything at this moment, this really has to do with ego and that, you know, the way I do it, it's better, or, you know, what I think is always smarter or faster or whatever. And just getting to the point to realize that, you know, you may be all of those things, but at the same time, like, you can only reach and influence so many people within your sphere of influence.
Well, it has to be a genuine partnership, something that accomplishes the good. You have to cast a vision of accomplishing the good for both parties involved. So otherwise you're using people, you're not partnering with them. And sorry, Todd is distracting me by staring into his microphone like it's a telescope.
It's shiny.
Not that shiny.
Goodness sakes. What I was saying was the idea that in order to competition is when I'm trying to reach my ends at your expense.
Right.
Partnership is not reaching my ends with your help. Partnership is reaching our ends together. You know, it's reaching a common goal. And so that's the thing that I think has to happen is
I can't. He's shaking.
Todd is over here now laughing like a small child. Do we need to take a timeout, Todd? Are you verklempt?
I'm verklempt.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Have some
Kevin
coffee.
Was going to say something.
No, I was going to say
useful and on topic.
Yeah, what you're talking about really dovetails into the last question, which
yes,
is what are the key elements of effective partnership? And the thing that I really thought through was transparency, like being willing to be honest, even almost to a fault, like almost to the point to where you're kind of not brash, but you're compassionate and then saying, look, that doesn't make sense for us.
Right.
Especially when you're talking about an external partnership and saying, we are coming to you because we feel like you add these three or four things of value. And then going to that person, trying to understand them in that partnership, saying, we feel like we know you well enough to say that we feel like we could add these things of value. Mm-hmm. And really it's opening, you know, being willing to open up your hand and say, this is who we are. This is what we've done well. This is what we're the best. We feel like we're the best at.
And these are things that we fall short in.
Right. Exactly. You know,
these are things that we're not as good at. I think the insecurity that we talked about earlier in terms of obstacles has to be set aside here, where you go in and you say, we're good at this. We want to achieve this. These are the things we bring to the table. Here's all the reasons we are not likely to accomplish that on our own. And then you listen for the common goal from what the partner organization, the partner team says. And then between the two of you, you're both honest. If you oversell yourself or you undersell your weaknesses, you're setting a partnership up for failure. Well, both sides need to know what you can and cannot do.
Right.
The only thing that I'll add to what you guys all, I would boil down to what you said as being two things, humility and openness. Mm-hmm. I would add to that just the trust factor. There has to be trust that this is going to be mutually beneficial. You're not doing this for your own devices. There's no agenda, anything like that. I genuinely trust that person. Then we'll enter into, an agreement relationship.
Go ahead.
Oh, what I was just going to say on top of that, the thing that I noticed, if I think about all of our partnerships, the ones that are the most successful for us are the ones where I actually like the people that we're hanging out with.
It really does help.
I would hang out with them outside of the work context, and I'm happy to know them. And so the stress level of meeting their expectations. Yeah. It's a good stress level. I don't want to disappoint them because I like hanging out with them.
Personal trust overflows into ministerial or work trust. If you trust somebody as a friend, you're more likely to then trust them in a work context. If you don't know them as a friend, then the relationship takes a different shape. And that's not necessarily a problem, but it is. It's another challenge. Todd, earlier you mentioned the cadence of accountability.
Yes.
I think that in a partnership, that needs to be on the table. So, because you constantly need to keep the common goal at the forefront, because it is so easy to veer back into your own lanes where you fall into your own pattern of work, your own way of doing things, your own agendas, and not because you have anything against the other side, but because that's just your natural way of doing things. So keeping that common goal on the table keeps people inspired. It keeps your questions in place of, is this on brand? Are we on point? Are we doing the things we need to do? Are we working together well? Because otherwise the partnership just becomes, again, parallel courses as opposed to working together to better one another.
So the last point that I want to make is one of the things that keeps you good friends is clearness and contracts.
Clarity. Yeah. English.
Just be sure that you have contracts and that everything is clear.
Something on paper.
Good contracts make good friends. That's it.
Yeah.
All right. Good contracts make good friends. So get all your friends to sign a contract with you. It's just a good rule for all of life. That's what Todd does. That's why Kevin and I are friends with him. We signed up for a 3-year term. We're coming to the end of it. We'll see if we re-sign.
I'm like 2 years out.
Are you overdue?
I'm overdue.
That's right. So you're on a month-to-month basis right now on this contract?
Yep.
All right. Well, listeners, we appreciate you tuning in. Jump on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. It helps us from a self-confidence standpoint. Todd is severely lacking. And then it also helps from other people discovering this podcast. Go to lifeway.com/leadership to find out more and to see these show notes. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in next time.
Don't forget to check out Southeastern Seminary's numerous education and training opportunities to help you grow in ministry. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more. That's sebts.edu/5LQ.